This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Podcast. We haven't done this in a while, but Ed, this is, why don't we just call it sports season?
Yes, it's the, start of hockey season, which is like the start of sports season in Canada. And, you know, fairly eventful events here. We're taping this on Thursday, the day after Austin Matthews Day, as it'll forever be known in hockey and Canada's lore.
Yeah. First of all, I'm Paul Chapman, by way of introduction, joined by Province Sports columnist Ed Willis. And Ed, we can be cynical about so much Toronto, and, you know, I think going into it, you'd say, well, yeah, I mean, they always get excited about the Leafs in Toronto, but oh my God, are they ever consumed with the Jays? But what a turn of the tail last night. It was one of those moments that, regardless of the team or your affiliation, if you weren't watching live, as you saw the news breaks or notices come in, it was just more remarkable. He scored his first goal, first hat trick, like, unbelievable. And then, of course, they lose.
To really enjoy this story, or to really appreciate its impact, I think you have to move Toronto from the equation, because there's an emotional reaction with most Canadians about anything connected to Toronto, especially when there's this sense that the story is getting shoved down their throat. Basically, a Toronto story becomes a national story. This is such a huge story for the sport. It really is. Again, take Toronto out of the equation and just think of this identification of a new star in the league. Not only that, but a kid who was raised in Phoenix, Arizona, of all places. He's got charisma. He's got this incredible backstory. And now you couple that with what Connor McDavid did in Edmonton, too. And I really think this has the potential to be a watershed moment for the NHL going forward. I hearken back to 1994, and I know that's such a fond memory for most Canucks fans, but I remember the famous Sports Illustrated cover, "Hockey is Cool Again." And at that point, it seemed like hockey was ready to make inroads against basketball as the third sport of the major sports in the United States. They had a toehold, and of course, they capitalized on that immediately by having a prolonged work stoppage. And for me, they've been struggling to regain that momentum ever since, but I think they're positioned now. I really do, and I don't see another labor stoppage on the horizon, so I think they've really got a chance to capture the momentum of these two young superstars created on Wednesday night.
Now, in a way, Ed, it's funny because it does continue the only good storyline from the World Cup of Hockey, and that was Team North America's success. And we do know about the traditional aspect of hockey coaches who, you know, we're seeing it here in Vancouver. Fans seemingly don't want Jake Virtanen to go to the minors. They want to see a young player play. But hockey management is cautious with young players. You need to learn your place. You need to learn your craft. Obviously, we're talking about first overall picks. It's a next level. Are Matthews and McDavid as talented as they appear? I mean, certainly we saw McDavid last year.
Yeah.
Or is this just like a wonderfully fluke experience to see from Matthews last night? Or do you think these guys are both generational talents?
Well, it's so hard to know with Matthews. I mean, I didn't anticipate it. In fact, I had this snarky comment, he might not even be the best rookie on the Leafs. Nailed another one there. But it's so hard with 18-year-old players, because, you know, I remember back to Joe Thornton's first year with Boston, and if he got 20 points that year, that's all he got. And again, he was like prototypical big playmaking skilled center. He was going to set the world on fire. It didn't happen that way. So it's hard to know. McDavid is the real deal. McDavid is Sidney Crosby 2.0. The only thing that's going to slow him down or prohibit him from reaching the heights he should is an injury. He is a generational talent. I think that's clear to anybody. Matthews, we're going to have to wait and see.
Fabian Brunstrom had a hat trick in his
I've talked to Mark Crawford a lot about him, and he described him as Ron Francis with speed. Ron Francis is a Hall of Fame center. That's pretty good. If he's that player, but, you know, is he a member of the Pantheon? Is he in the Lemieux we're on hallowed ground here, if he's even remotely close to that, and it's funny, you know, and I want to get your opinion on this, because so much of the hockey world has been consumed by Crosby, Ovechkin, and I've never gotten the sense that reached anything more than the devoted hockey community. It's almost like the way Donald Trump keeps speaking to his fan base, and it hasn't grown. And I'm not sure if Crosby and Ovechkin is that kind of, you know, transcendent rivalry personalities that drew people into the game. What's your sense of that?
Well, no, I think that rivalry got stale, and I think ultimately you do want to see.
Yeah, because the Capitals never won. They never showed up when it meant something.
It's the old, you know. I mean, you obviously were the heart of it. Dan Marino talked about it as the greatest quarterback of all time when he was playing, and because he never won the ring, you don't ever even really hear him in the conversation anymore. I think all sports is about championships. And you know, I think winning last year really helped Crosby. But look, Crosby, it's interesting what you say about Matthews. And you're right, it's one game. So let's see where he goes. But he certainly comes with expectation that he's a special player as a number one pick.
Yeah.
You just have to revisit the hysteria here that was in Vancouver over the draft lottery. But I think to have a guy who brings that extra level of media attention on him with the personality, with, I mean, Sid's a great player, but you know Sidney Crosby is. He's not going to sell a lot of people outside of Pittsburgh, as you said. But the one thing I do like about it, Ed, and at least the promise of it, is not only is it fresh, it's, you know, it's star-driven, and the league tried to get away from that for so long. We'd hammer them on their marketing when they'd have anonymous models in hockey gear trying to sell the game. Every sport is about personality. It's about LeBron. It's about Shaq. It's about Michael Jordan. That's why the NBA is thriving. Honestly, I was blown away that a preseason game, I know it was the Warriors, but Raptors and Warriors sold out here. The younger generation has tapped in. Howard Smurr wrote a little bit about this for us a couple of weeks ago. They've tapped into that star power and the culture around the sport itself. And hockey's been waiting for someone like that. Crosby and Ovechkin did not get to that level for whatever reason. No. I think we have an opportunity here. And again, I'm not putting these guys in that category yet, but to see young players this young do stuff that makes you turn your head. You talked about it. Jim Rome talking about it.
Yeah.
I think that the game's been crying out for that for a long time.
Well, no, and it wouldn't it be great if the goaltending was as shitty all season as it was on Wednesday night? And to me, this is where the NBA has always had it over hockey. Irrespective of what you think of the two sports, the NBA has always been a star-driven league. Its game identifies superstars. It presents them in the best possible light. In hockey, it is so much a team-oriented game. And, you know, we've talked about Crosby has kind of gone through an evolution here where he's a great individualist when he came in, and now he's like the ultimate team guy, and he's able to build. The way Pittsburgh won that Stanley Cup, I thought, was really revealing and instructive about the way the game has gone in the last 10 years. And it's kind of this total team defensive effort, and you smother the other team with back pressure and, you know, speed on the forecheck, and more importantly, speed on the backcheck. Well, that's great for hockey purists, but it doesn't really sell the game now, does it? Now you've got these two charismatic young stars. And I really hope they're allowed to, you know, tell their own story, to paint their own picture, because the game needs that. And it's not only stars that drive sports. I think it's young stars.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that you know, that those kind of, you know, those shooting stars that capture people's imagination and hold it. And it's been a while since hockey's been in this position. I mean, I think you have to go back to Crosby's rookie year, which is, I believe, 05-06, the first year after the lockout, 05-06. And the arrival of, but I mean, geez, that's a decade now.
Well, yeah, who else
which
has
is
there
crazy.
Been? Yeah.
I know. There's been a couple of, you know, okay guys, but it's just, you know, I know I'm running through the Rolodex in my mind, I really can't think of anybody.
It's a great point, because, and I'm not going to do the cynical shit all over hockey crap, but, you know, I look at a guy, Hall of Famer, absolutely just one of the icons in this sport is Steve Yzerman. And he has this no-nonsense attitude. He has an incredibly gifted kid in Tampa Bay, Jonathan Drouin, practically drove him out of town because it's no, keep your mouth shut. It's team first. That is a hockey storyline. And yes, everyone loves that. And I know there's people listening right now rolling their eyes going, look, this is what makes – we heard the Cherry shtick for so long, but look at the other sports, and you're absolutely right. It's the young stars. It's the personality, mm-hmm. what sets them apart. I've laughed about this for a long time. You know, you will gladly keep a guy like Artem Chubarov up here and say he need, you know, he's solid defensively. You don't worry about teaching him offense, but God forbid you have a flashy rookie who doesn't come back in his own end alone. Hockey coach will kill that guy. Yeah. And I do think that's what's been missing for the game. You talked about when hockey was cool again, and Gary Bettman sure as hell did his darndest to make sure that that didn't happen. And it was the hockey went into an era there where the owners were specifically, the players are not going to matter. We're the boss. We'll show you who's the boss. The game is not about you. You'll get too powerful. And it was at the detriment to the sport, the rules, the coaching, everything. So even for a couple of fleeting moments here and there, to think that the game's going to have these stars, God damn it, we talk about it all the time. Two-on-ones, three-on-twos, the era in the 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. that we loved hockey, that it was exciting, that there were actually highlights, not six guys bashing away in front of the net and all of a sudden the red light goes on. And that's what I'm hoping that this young sort of injection of skill brings.
Yeah, there were two tipping points in the evolution of hockey in the last 20 years. One was that work stoppage in 94, 95. I thought the other one was the New Jersey Devils winning the Stanley Cup in 95 on the heels of that great series between the Canucks and the Rangers, winning it with the defense first system, winning it without any real stars to speak of. Yeah. I mean, their best player was Marty Brodeur or Scott Stevens or Scott Niedermeyer. And again, defense wins champions, offense says. So yeah, we all know how it goes, but that's all. That also, I think that plotted the path for hockey going forward, and now I think they're in a position to really try and capture something here. And I really hope last night or Wednesday night wasn't a one-off. I really hope this is part of a trend. The game has been trending younger. I think we can agree with that. And I think that is part of, like, you know, sort of localize this story. Vertanen's appeal.
Absolutely.
He's still only 20 years old, but I mean, you've got to plug that guy into the lineup and see if he can play, because that's the way the game's going. If you don't have that 20, 21, 22, it's not like you can wait around for the 26, 27 year olds anymore. The game is just so fast. So fast, and they need those guys, and the Canucks have those guys. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they transition them into the lineup.
I painted this picture for a couple of people over the last couple of days and got into an interesting debate about it. The absolute nightmare scenario for any Canuck fan older than 20 is, after seeing the Oilers arrogantly, you know, slap the Canucks around for a decade, and then the Oilers, you know, just become bottom feeders. No one wanted to play there. They were terrible. The nightmare for the Canucks now without ever winning a cup is to be passed by the Oilers again, looking at them wide and saying bye as they, you know, become a contender again. The Canucks still look to be maybe a little bit more of a downward bottoming out before they start to come back up. And a lot of people would turn around and say, I'm not sold on the Oilers yet. We've seen every year, everyone talks them up. And I don't know. And I know last night was just one game. And yeah, I do think McDavid versus the other, you know, high draft picks that they've had. I think this team's ready to make a move. I really do.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You cannot collect as much talent as they have and continue to struggle. It's just there is no precedent for it in the game. And, you know, they've made some moves here, too. They've got a bit of a defense now. They have a reasonable NHL goalie. I don't know how that translates because they're younger players. But, you know, I think with the Canucks, the larger issue isn't so much Edmonton. It's all the good young teams in the West.
Yeah.
And have they been able to keep in touch with Winnipeg, with Arizona, with Calgary? Because they're all kind of at the same stage of their development. They've all kind of been stockpiling young players. It's just that the young players those other teams have stockpiled seem to be a little further along in their development, a little higher level. It's funny, you know, we were talking about Austin Matthews, and I remember the draft, some people thinking Patrick Laine might be a more talented player, might have more of an impact this year because he's a goal scorer. He's just one of these plug-and-play guys.
Yeah.
And with that shot, he's going to score 30 in his rookie year. And it seems a little comical now, back in retrospect. But I think that's the real issue for the Canucks here. I mean, they are rebuilding. They don't want to say it, but they really are. They're plugging younger players in the lineup, but so is everybody around them. And for the most part, they're plugging players in who were like second overall picks, third overall picks, top five picks, picks with the real pedigree. And that, to me, is the real danger for the Canucks, because I think everybody will agree they're going to be better this year, but it's compared to what? And it could be they make improvements across the board and still finish with 7 points and second last overall.
Just before on that, I'll just wanted to pass along before we not necessarily finish with Matthews, but I did see something on that silo of snark that is Twitter that said the Leafs are winless when Matthews scores less than 5 goals.
Yeah, that's Kevin McGrann from the Toronto Star. That was a great one.
I did want to ask you, though, about the Canucks. Preseason predictions are always, you know, they are what they are. I'm not sure that you ever put a lot of stock in power rankings, but I did see that in TSN and ESPN's power rankings, they had the Canucks as dead last in the league.
Oh, everybody does. Yeah. This is not an isolated. That's like the consensus across the hockey world. And not only finishing last, but falling off the cliff. I see them playing meaningful games in March and not being able to do it. I see them finishing about 10th in the West. I am not completely sold on where Arizona's going. They're just so young. And I'm not completely sold on the Flames either. And I think some of the teams that finished above the Canucks, namely Minnesota, are going to fall back to them a little bit. Now, all this is dependent on the Sedin twins, not getting old this year. I know we've been waiting for it, but
there's an argument that it kind of happened around February, March last year.
Well, and again, I would counter that by saying they were the only two scoring threats. And they still managed to get 22 goals out of Yannick Hansen. They should get a Nobel Prize for that. So I think they are still productive players. I think they will be in the 65 to 70 point range. I think Louis Erickson is good for 27 to 30 goals. And I think that should be good enough if everybody else, pulls their weight. I just look at over the individual seasons that some of the Canucks had last year, and it is impossible for them to be as bad and as injured as they were last year.
So if you looked at the team at the end of last year, it was clear the blue line was a mess. Although Hutton was a nice surprise. Yep. Tanev seems to have, I don't want to say surpass expectations because they were pretty low to begin with, and he's never going to be a guy who's going to win the Norris, but certainly move up into that top four. And then there's the McCann trade for Gudbranson. Obviously, this is that they've gone to get a lot bigger on the blue line. But at the end of last season, you would say that the back end was definitely a weakness. How do you see that now? And I'm including the goalies in that.
Oh, I think it's improved. And that's why I'm fascinated by the Gudbranson trade. It's, and I understand, for people who aren't familiar with it, his analytical stats aren't good. There's a couple of reasons for that. And it's funny when you go back and really look at his season, most of those were accumulated in the first half when he was paired with Willie Mitchell. And I'm just not sure you can have two slow stay-at-home defensemen playing in the same pairing in the NHL. He was actually paired with Brian Campbell over the last half of the season. And it was a marked improvement all the way through the playoffs when he led all the Panthers defensemen in ice time. So I think if he's anything like what the Canucks project him to be, I think it's a home run for the organization. You just don't get 24-year-old mean, snarly defensemen who could be future captains. And I don't think they paid that big a price. Now, if he's a bust, now that's like, that's a nightmare scenario for the Canucks.
Conversely, from the Canucks' DNA is if McCann goes on to be a true all-star goal scorer. I mean, that's.
And it's possible. And to me, he topped out as a second line player, probably a 25 goal, 50. Good player. But I mean, you look at what the Canucks need were, and those guys, like Gudbranson was the third overall pick in his draft here.
Yeah.
I mean, you take Hall of Famers in that spot. Now he's not that, but he has a pedigree. And you also go by the reaction of the Panthers players, who'd been Luongo and Mitchell when he was traded because they knew what he had. So to me, that's just a fascinating case. And, it's fresh in my mind. There was a game in Colorado last year I was at, and I want to say it was early February, late January, early February, and the Canucks had just gotten their team back. They go into Colorado, they beat the Avalanche. It was 3-4-1, and it was one of the most complete games they played last year. And you thought, this is going to be the point. Now, Alex Adler and Brandon Sutter left the game, and they didn't seem like serious injuries until later we found out Sutter broken jaw out for the season, Adler broken ankle.
But didn't they go on a mini run after that?
No, they won the next game. Yeah. They go into Phoenix and they beat the net, and they win the next game because, if I remember right, Ryan Miller just stood on his head. And then they just fell off the cliff after that. But they were actually, they were in a position. I think they were 4 points out of that final playoff spot. And again, it probably, they probably were never going to make it, but they would have been playing meaningful games in March. And then, of course, we go into the draft lottery.
And now we look at this.
And Keith Tkachuk, the guy they pass on, is in Calgary's opening day lineup.
It's Dale Tallon all over again.
Oh, man. It can't be. It can't be.
But I did want to ask you on Gudbranson, and you did write about him today. You can check it out at theprovince.com. If you want to read Ed's column on Gudbranson, how it could define the Benning era, which I wholeheartedly agree with. When you look at the many Panthers to Canucks defensemen, from Jovanovski to Garrison to Ballard, where does he fall in this trade? Could he be a Jovanovski for the Canucks?
No, he's not that type of player. I mean,
in terms of impact.
In terms of impact, yeah, I think he could. I could. Jovo was such a unique player, and it is such a shame he was never healthy, because at his peak, to me, he was the best defenseman in Canucks history. The only problem is we only saw him at his peak for like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then he had that soft tissue groin thing, and he wasn't, but geez, when he was, you know, when that second or third year, I mean, he was like a young Larry Robinson. He would just take the puck and go. He was mean. He could fight. He, you know, he was a point producer. He was all those things. We just didn't see enough of it. Gudbranson is more the steady, and I'm trying to think of a good comparable for him, and I'm not sure if one exists. In years past, Darian Hatcher might be one, but he's like Darian Hatcher at the, you know, mobility of a mailbox. Gudbranson isn't that, and I think he might actually, you know, playing with Hutton, he might actually figure more point, but his impact will be in all those intangible areas, making a better player out of Hutton, leadership in the dressing room, toughness. And the other thing is, now I didn't look this up, and it's a point I should have developed in the column, but if memory serves, the Canucks penalty killing was just god awful last year, and this is one of
Gudbranson's special teams.
That's true too. Basically, but Gudbranson's calling card.
Basically anything that involved coaching, they were poor in last year.
Yes, and that's probably a segue into the next topic.
It is. I think, honestly, if you look at this team and the expectations are very low, yet there does seem to be, you know, a just very widely believed tenet that if this team is struggling around Christmas, they may be looking at a coaching change.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I think, well, you know, Willie has to prove he can elevate this team somehow. He did it the first year, but they had an awful lot of things go right, and now, and then last year, I think, you know, the analytics community would say, you know, that was completely predictable, their performance. It was, you know, the trends were there. They're well established. There was just, the Canucks just had a year, 2 years before when they made the playoffs, where most things went right for them. Last year, those things didn't go right. In fact, most of them went horribly wrong. And the result was that, you know, they finished, I believe they finished 27th in the 30-team league. So Willie's got his team. He's got his players. They have improved. They've had 2 years under him. This will be the third year. If it doesn't happen this year, sorry, that's just the way the game goes. He's gone.
So whether this year is, you know, as Jason Botchford wrote this piece recently for us at The Province, dumpster fire or, you know, a surprise playoff contender, it could go either way. Ultimately, do you like the core and the direction this team is going?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I just don't know if these guys are just good NHL players or if these guys can be different makers. And by these guys, I mean Bo Horvat, I mean Ben Hutton, I mean Jacob Markstrom. And then the next wave coming, like, is Besser going to be an NHL goal scorer? Is Sven Berchi, is he a 20-25 goal scorer? I mean, he basically was last year. After the first 20 game of the season, he produced at that clip. So that's the question for these guys. Vertanen is certainly in that conversation too. Is he just going to be an up and down kind of third line, second line some nights, or is he a bona fide, you know, first line impact player? Is he a power forward who will get you 30 goals, you know, and play that game and have that physical presence? Sixth player overall, that's what he should be.
Steve Bernier, Todd Bertuzzi. Right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
And throw in any number of large.
Geez, Zach scored a beautiful goal last night. I'm still holding out hope for him.
Yeah, you know, Rob Brown had a couple of good seasons there too.
Yeah, right? Well, that's true.
Depends who you play with. But yeah, that's the conundrum of the Oilers. I, you know, if I look certainly around the NHL, I think there were people hoping for a push from the Blackhawks still to be there to maybe bounce back a little bit. But there has been a bit of a changing of the guard in the West. San Jose got there last year. They're still an older team. You wonder if they've topped out. But yeah, absolutely. Will LA be back is a big question. But you've got your Dallas. You've got St. Louis. You've got these other teams in the mix. You talked about all the other teams in the West. You know, Colorado as well. Great collection of young talents and very skilled players. That's the West and the East. It's a lot of people picking Tampa Bay. You know, Washington I've seen in there a lot as well. Who really do you think at the end of the season are going to be the top contenders to win the Stanley
Cup? Well, I mean, I said Chicago and Tampa in the Stanley Cup final, but the team I love, and it's funny because you ticked off virtually every team in the NHL. The team I love is Nashville.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, they've accumulated and they changed their personality. And it, to me, it's such a great, and you know, we're talking about the impact of individual stars and how the NHL sometimes resists that individuality and all the rest. Well, PK Subban is the ultimate individualist, but he's also exactly what the Predators need. They'd plugged along in kind of this system oriented, you know, grinding out, punching above their weight, kind of system. But now they have players. Now they have real talent. And, to me, they're fascinating, because they are positioned and in again, as we talked about, in a league which is trending younger, they've got those players who are, I think for the most part, are 25 and under. And it seems to me like they're really ready to make a step. I don't know if Pekkarinen is still an elite goalie. That might be, you know, that might be the X factor there, but I just love the team and I love the way they're composed. And the other part is Peter Laviolette, the guy to get the most out of them.
Yeah, and in a market that probably needs to pay a little more attention to marketing, they let PK be PK, and I think that's important.
No, absolutely. Yeah,
Montreal.
They're trying to suppress him. That's right. Because he got too much attention. Well, there's no such thing as in Nashville. Yeah. And I remember the first week he was on there, you'd go onto YouTube and there was PK at Tootsie's and there was PK at the Children's Hospital and there was PK. They just love him. Yeah. And he's a charismatic, dynamic individual. You know, the kind that, again, the NHL should celebrate, should make a cornerstone of some of their marketing efforts, and to some degree they have, but he hasn't been celebrated, and I think he will be celebrated in Nashville.
You know,
if he has the season, he should.
Yeah, I know you were playfully saying I ticked off every team in the NHL, but isn't that a great thing? I mean,
sure.
Look, we love the NBA, and I think the NBA is enjoying a great resurgence as well, but I can pretty much tell you the top 3-4 teams already, and you may get a surprise here and there that might make a playoff run, but not to win the title. Honestly, I know health will play a big part of it, but this is a could we be entering a golden age of the NHL? Because I don't see a clear favorite, and I do see I can make an argument for 10, maybe 12 teams as if we get a couple of surprises that really could be in the hunt.
Parity is the foundation, in my opinion, on which the NFL built its brand. Every year, an individual franchise can sell hope to its fan base. Now, it might only be for half the season, except Cleveland, but going in, and I remember reading a couple of times, boy, if this happens, and if Josh Gordon can just stay off the bong for, and if this and that, and it just, okay, Cleveland, the exception to prove the rule, but for everybody else, right? Yeah. You know, the fans are engaged, they're excited, and then there is hope, and it happens enough year after year that one team pops out, a couple of teams pop out, breakout stars, all the rest of it, and I think that's pretty close to where the NHL is right now. There is great parity in the league, and really, I don't see anybody being, the West just seems so compressed to me, and that's why this idea of the Canucks finishing with 63, 65 points, I just don't see it. It would, you know, take them, you know, just like a plunge off the cliff. So that's it. And I think, again, getting back to this theme of, you know, the NHL being in a good place with young stars and the way I think they are positioned for something here.
So you look at all these teams that are at the top end and, you know, the Canucks are obviously going to have a fight on their hands this season, but we don't think they're the worst team in the NHL as many others sort of that side of Manitoba tend to. But who are the teams that are really struggling for you are going to be in this, in the lottery conversation again next year, which unfortunately, if this was the year to win it, and again, Junior will evolve, but the kid that they're talking about, yeah. Nolan, as being the consensus number one pick right now, not really a franchise changer. You know, no. Solid player, but not a guy who's going to maybe you're going to be your cornerstone.
Boy, that's a fascinating one to me. I'm just going to segue here. And when teams get that first overall pick, and as often as not, it's a one-shot deal.
Yep.
And you can get that guy, and Pittsburgh won the lottery, literally.
Twice.
Coming out of the lockout. Yeah. Well, yeah, they did the first time save. Well, both times it saved the franchise, yeah. But not only that, but to get Sidney Crosby. And you look and who could have that been? And, you know, and I go back to the Raptors. They finally get the first overall pick, and it turns out to be Bargnani.
Yeah.
Decent complimentary player, but no, you know, not the guy. And, you know, you look at the first overall picks, and I remember looking at 30 of them, and it seemed to me,
NFL,
it
too, right?
Seemed to me 20, with the NBA, again, it's so much more individual, but in the NBA, it seemed to me 2/3 of the 30 picks were Hall of Famers. And if they weren't Hall of Famers, they were pretty damn close. So yeah, and you're right. Football the same. Remember?
Well, just the quarterbacks. I'm thinking the number one guys who have been absolutely just washouts, but the ones that have made the difference.
That's right.
They win championships. That's
probably the most extreme example too. So where were we? I'm sorry.
No, just on in that conversation for the worst teams in the NHL.
Yes, okay.
Because you talked about Pittsburgh. I mean, you have seen teams that hit this. Tampa Bay is another one who won a championship with a guy like LeCavalier, and then when they hit the depths have been had guys like Stamkos as well, who get them back up to that top. And people will talk about the Canucks and say they've never had that one guy. You know, when you're always drafting in that third to 10th,
that's right.
You don't hit that.
Yeah. You have to get so lucky.
You have to get really lucky. Yeah, absolutely. So we know the Blackhawks still feeding off Kane and Taves as you know, top three picks.
Yeah, Jonathan Taves. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So now, I mean, I look at the teams that are in that equation, and certainly if everything went wrong for the Canucks and they, you know, maybe they had some turmoil, maybe they suffer a coaching change, maybe the Sedins just get too tired and they have injuries, they'll be in the conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just looking at the other worst teams in the NHL.
No, that's it. Well, I mean, I look, there's so many teams that, like, Arizona is still so young, you know, and I know they, you know, they picked up this guy and they picked up that guy, but there's still, and until, I'm still not 100%. So I looked at that lineup Toronto put on the ice, and conveniently removed Matthews in his four goals. And I think they're going to struggle again, especially if they get goaltending like that all season. But I don't see that one team you can point to and go, boy, they really stink. They're going to be awful. Every team.
Columbus is one of those teams that never chains it together, but still have enough.
And how many times have we said, watch this team? Yeah. They could make a move. Although, you know, they sent Dubois. I thought that was back to Junior. I thought that was an interesting development that flew under a lot of people's radar because that was the guy supposedly the Canucks were in love with. Again, you know, who knows? 18-year-old centerman. It's not like he's going to, but the third overall pick for a rebuilding franchise, it would have been nice if he would have been ready to play.
I got into a dumb argument with someone last night on Twitter, of course.
Were there any intelligent arguments on Twitter?
Yeah, no, they were suggesting that Ulevi was a complete bust because he looked terrible in the Young Stars tournament and they made the wrong pick and you know, they should fire Benning for that right now.
Wow.
The 18-year-olds, defensemen, they do develop at different levels. I know there have been some guys who have made that leap, but it's honestly hockey more than any other sport. I do think you need to give teams a chance to develop, and that is the thing with the Canucks. I know fans who are shelling out money now, they want hope and they want progress. But there's been lots of criticism of Benning and Linden that I agree with. But overall, they were brought in to draft and restock from a prospect level. And maybe they are missing that home run hitter. And that's going to be a challenge for them to go and get it, especially if you don't look into a top one, two, or three pick in any given draft. But I look at what they have now versus what they had 5 years ago. And some of those are Mike Gillis's prospects, to be fair. And I don't think things are as scorched earth here as people will say.
The first directive they had was to, you know, restock the cupboards to build some depth in the organization. And I think any reasonable person would say they've succeeded there. Again, the question it comes back to, have they just, you know, have they upgraded a bad team into a mediocre team? Or have they upgraded a bad team into a contending team? And when I say contending, somebody who's in the playoff conversation at least, but will continue to improve over time with the young players. And I guess that, you know, that's what we're going to learn here in the next little while. And it comes back to who are these guys? Is Bo Horvat really Patrice Bergeron in the making? Is he a 60-point second line center, which is, you know, just a really, really good player in the NHL? Is Besser a 30 goal scorer? Is Verde, you know, we've been through it.
Yeah.
That's what we have to wait and see. That's really the next step for this franchise.
Okay. Now I know you got to get going to get to the rink, but I did mention that it was sports season and we won't have time to get into the NFL or the CFL at this point, but I did want to quickly touch on Major League Baseball. This is why I love sports, Ed. I don't really have a dog in the fight at this point. I really dislike the Jays, I guess. So whoever the Jays are playing is my dog. But I do kind of like the Chicago Cubs. I find the story romantic. I think 108 years. Chicago is one of my favorite cities in the world. And those long-suffering fans, I think it would be just an awesome story. But why I say I love sports is I'm watching that Game 4 against San Francisco. And, you know, it's sort of, oh, yeah, there's a game on tonight, and I flip it on, and it's the late in it, you know, watch probably last half of that game. And all I can think to myself is, after being up 2-0, they're going to head back to Wrigley Field for a deciding game, and all the nerves and the energy and the ghosts of their home crowd are going to weigh squarely on those players' shoulders the first hit that San Francisco gets, and I thought they were in real trouble. And then all of a sudden, one after the other, and it wasn't like they got a lucky shot or a guy was hit by where there was an error. There's a young group of players there in Chicago who just seem to have a resilience. And that looks like Theo Epstein's put together a very special group there. I think it'd be a great story if the Cubs won, but you know, the Jays are obviously a big story as well. What's your impression of what we have left in these playoffs?
Well, yeah, Chicago is the team to beat. And I agree with you. I think that Game 4 against San Francisco, their comeback win, I think that parallels the 2004 Game 4 win Boston over the Yankees, where they came back to tie it in the ninth and then win it in extra innings. And that set the wheels in motion to come back from 3-0, to come back and break the curse of the Bambino. Yeah. And I just think, I agree with you. I just think there was so much history and everything that was tied up in that moment. And for them to beat back and not have to face those demons in Game 5 at Wrigley, I think is massive. If that team doesn't do it this year, they're going to do it at some point in the next 2-3 years. They just have too much talent. And I think I really think they're the team to beat this year. I think the Jays are a wonderful story. And I kind of changed my opinion of them going down to Seattle for those 3 games.
Well, nothing to change there.
Well, no, it totally did. But what really impressed me was being in Gibby's orbit for 3 days, and just like what a likable guy he is. And it kind of did change my perception of him. I, quite frankly, I thought he was a bit of a doofus. He was just kind of, you know, a guy who filled out the lineup card and he had better players than other guys. But you look at the way they won these games. I mean, for him to outmanage Buck Showalter the way he did in that wild card game, and for the way he manipulated the pitching staff. And there's holes on that team. I mean, they don't have a left-handed arm really a reliable left-handed arm out of the bullpen. And they lost Benoit, who is a huge piece of their bullpen, but he's been able to finesse and get his way through then. And it's a really good thing they had 4 days off, because they were riding Roberto Osuna way, way too hard. So it's an interesting one. I was talking to the people around the team in Seattle. Their sense was Gibby had to make the ALCS to save his job, because he's not Mark Shapiro's guy. He's not Ross Atkins' guy. They want to bring in Eric Wedge. They want to put their stamp on their franchise. Well, they can't do that now. And not only that, I think the way this season has gone, I don't know how Rodgers doesn't re-sign Edward Encarnacion. If they play a cheap card on this one, I think it's going to go really badly for them in the off season. When you look at the crowds, the TV numbers, everything, this isn't a budget team. This should be a cap team.
Well, I don't know that it's, you know, it's going the cheapy route. When you look at the success that they've had, and when you're in contention, the difference between the Jays then and the Jays 5 years ago, and as you're right, TV ratings play into it because it's the same owners, but it's, yeah, I mean, it's a money.
Well, they were able to build the team. They were able to build the team by spending.
Yeah.
But can they sustain it? Because it just requires more money down the road. And they've got nothing coming up. This is their team. This is their team for the next two, three years. And they have to restate. Absolutely.
Prospects to get where they are. And you look at Syndergaard. Yeah. And woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah, the kid in Detroit. I know. Yeah, yeah. Really interesting going forward.
Yep. Well, thanks for joining us, Ed. I know there's lots more hockey talk going forward. And, it's too bad we didn't have time to talk about Tom Brady's return. They're playing my Bengals this week.
So. Oh, Bengals, I know.
I think that window's closed on the Martin Lewis there, but there we go. Another story for another day. Thanks for joining us, Ed. You can find all Ed's stuff at theprovince.com, and we venture to do this for you every Friday.
Cheers.